Accession number 28453, Reel 1.
Laura Confino, Reel 1. So if I could ask you first of all, Laura, to tell me something about your background in Germany. And this, of course, would be before the war, and I believe even before the rise of Hitler, you could say something about your life.
Yes. Well, I had a very happy early family life. But the one sad thing about it was that my mother died very young. She died in 1932. She had cancer. And so she was ill for a very long time. And we grew up, my brother and I, we had to be very quiet in the house because she suffered terribly. And then eventually, when she died in 1932, my father was absolutely devastated because it was a very wonderful marriage. And he was so upset that he wanted to die on the spot and be buried with her. I mean, this is basically how he felt at the time. But then he told us about our mother's death. We were in the hills, in the Taunus, which are the hills near Frankfurt. And
is that where you lived, in the hills near
Frankfurt? No. We didn't live there, but we lived in Frankfurt itself. But he took us there, we went in a droschke at the time, and he told us about mother then. And then when we came back to Frankfurt, my mother's mother and father came to live with us because my father was working and they really took charge of the household. And so it became a different setup, but my grandparents were incredibly good and took it upon themselves to do what they could, especially my grandmother. But then my grandmother had another misfortune, and that was that her second daughter died the same year as my mother. So she was left absolutely devastated. But I think it helped her to be able to look after me and my brother and sort of took charge of the household. And I think that kept her going, really.
Was your brother older than you?
My brother was 18 months older than myself.
What was his name?
His name was Oswald.
Oswald.
Oswald Herbert. And the name Herbert was given to him because my father and mother thought at the time when he was born that maybe he won't live in Germany, and it would be a good thing to have another name which would be more sort of used in England, for instance, or somewhere. And that was a very good thought at the time, but it didn't help, unfortunately.
Well, what do you remember about those early years? You know, I know you've explained so well about your mother's situation, but you would have been growing up in the, I know it's sometime after, but that aftermath of the First World War, wouldn't you? And I wondered if you remember if this impacted on your father and your economic situation in Germany before the rise of Hitler.
Well, my father actually volunteered for the German army before the First World War, and that was the time when the Jews felt that they were becoming Germans, that there was no restriction anymore, no differentiation. It was a very false belief. But in Prussia, they wouldn't allow this. But in Bavaria, which was the part where my father then lived, that was perfectly encouraged almost. And so he joined the army. I think it was 2 years before the World War. And then he fought in the First World War, and he had his decorations and all the rest of it. But the interesting thing is that he never, never spoke about his time in the war. The only thing he would tell us is that Christmas Eve, they were in the trenches, and they exchanged cigarettes with the British soldiers. And then they went back into the trenches, and he said the madness of it, then we started shooting at each other again. And that was the only thing I knew about him in the war, except that he was quite badly wounded, and he lost a lot of blood, and but was saved. And this is all I know about him, and it seems very strange now that he just didn't want to talk about it.
I found that with a lot of veterans in this country, you know, who are at the front, that they don't like to talk about it either.
Yes.
So perhaps it was all so terrible.
Terrible.
But I wondered, life must have been quite hard for your father and your mother as well after the war, when you were sort of being born in the early 20s.
Yeah,
and growing
of course
up.
There was inflation. And my father kept a diary, actually, which I've got, which has some lovely little stories in it about how much it cost to buy a box of matches and how he bought himself a suit which would have cost three times the price the day after, sort of things like that, which are quite fascinating, actually. And my father was able to buy a house which they lived in. They had to, I mean, they were flats, and they lived, my parents lived in the top flat, and that is where my brother was born. And later on, when I was born, they moved to one of the larger flats downstairs, and it was a very nice neighborhood. And my earliest memories were really going to the Rose Garden and playing in the sand pit and little things like that. But then when it came to going to school, we had the school nearest to our house was only about 4 minutes away from where we lived. And I remember it was a great thing in those days, because the first day when you went to school, you were given a sort of cone-shaped bag full of sweets, and it was all very nicely decorated and colourful. And so you felt very proud going to school carrying this bag. And I believe we had nearly 45 girls in the class, and that was the usual thing then. One teacher, 45 girls, and when we learned to write, it was on what do you call it now?
The slate.
The slate, yes, that's right. And we learned Gothic handwriting. Of course, we didn't use the other alphabet. We learned, of course, to write and to read and sums and so on. And I, as far as I remember, I enjoyed going to school, and I had friends, and it was all very nice. And at that time, my mother was still alive, and she and my form teacher were very good friends, because they were both very interested in books and so on. And so it was a very nice atmosphere. But then as Hitler came into power, things started to change, and that is that the teacher, whose name was Herr Knauf, I remember, sort of absented himself. He didn't, gradually, he didn't want to know my mother or my father anymore. And at school itself, every morning when we turned up in class, there was the picture of Hitler on the wall above the pulpit, and we had to stand there with outstretched arms and say, Heil Hitler. And the atmosphere changed completely. And friends I had been going to their houses, and we were always together playing, and suddenly they didn't want to know me anymore. And so obviously you found it very hard to understand why should it happen that one day we were good friends and the next day they didn't want to know anymore. And except there was one Catholic girl, I remember, and we stayed friends for quite a long time. And eventually, of course, Jewish children were not allowed to stay in state schools anymore. And I had to leave there. And my father decided that we were going to move to Frankfurt itself, where there was a large Jewish school called the Philanthropin, which was a very well-known and very an excellent school. And we moved to Frankfurt, again very close to that school. And that was then a complete change. I mean, before, where I had been ostracized in a way and insulted, and I had my head measured, you know, as it was the custom, that, well, the rule then, they have to see who has an Aryan skull and that type of thing. And so in that philanthropine, we were given back a feeling of worth, I think, and of belonging. And it was very important to all of us, I think, because we could lead a normal school life. And much was expected of us. In fact, we had to learn, and we all knew that it was important to learn as much as possible, because many of us knew we were going to leave the country because conditions became increasingly more difficult. And then for me personally, the climax came at Kristallnacht, which was the 10th of November 38, when they came to us with long iron bars, and my father stood at the front door, and he had pinned his iron crosses and his decorations on his lapel, and he thought that would show them that he had fought in the war and they would leave us alone. But they pushed my grandparents and my father and myself, my brother had left by then to France, into the kitchen, and they started smashing up our home. And obviously there was a lot of noise, and we were all frightened, and my grandmother thought we were all going to be killed. And then after they'd finished what they wanted to do, they left. And suddenly it was all quiet. And we sort of came out of the kitchen, and when I saw what our home looked like, and it was all cluttered up and smashed up, and it looked awful. And I remember I looked around and I said to my father, I'm not going to stay here. And I walked out. And they tried to keep me back because they didn't know what was going on in the street and so on. But I just felt I can't stay here. And so I left, and I went to a little shop close by, which was run by a couple of elderly ladies. And I went into that shop and I sat down and I told them what had happened. And I started to cry and cry and cry, and they were quite shocked, actually, to hear what had happened. And eventually they said, well, you know, your father will be worried stiff. You must go back and see what is going on. And so I went back. And my father, the next day, he called a carpenter in. And this, again, it was an elderly man, and he came into the house and he looked round and he said, I can't believe it. I can't believe that such a thing can happen. He was shocked. And then, of course, we patched up and repaired what we could. And my father then phoned our family in England. A family that was my grandmother's brother and sister had settled in England quite a long time before the First World War, so they were well established. And he phoned them up and he said, look here, you must help her to get Laura to help to come to you, because it would be either now or never. And so they managed to get all the papers together. And I remember in Frankfurt itself, I mean, there were long queues of Jews all needing to have their papers stamped and everything got ready for them to leave. And there was a lot of fear and nervousness, and I remember the queues, and you had to stand and wait, and then it was all very very stressful. And eventually, and in fact quite amazingly quickly, I got permission to leave. And so I got my passport, and of course stamped with a big J, and the J in fact wasn't the Germans' idea. It was the idea of the Swiss. They said, because they were interested in not getting too many Jewish refugees into the country, and so they made the Germans put a J into each passport. So that was quite something I found out years later. And then when it came time for me to leave, that was at the end of December 38, and we had a very close Catholic friend whose name was Joschel Schmidt, and her husband, and we had been friends for years, and she had been friends with my mother and her sister. I mean, it goes back a long way. And they never had any children, and she sort of looked upon me as her daughter. And we always spent a lot of time together and went on holidays together and so on. And it was all sort of a very loving relationship. And she, Joschel, and my father took me to the station in Frankfurt the day I left, and all I was allowed to have on me was a very small suitcase, was just basics, and my father had given me also a red handkerchief, and he said, you have that, because when you get to England and you get to the station and they fetch you, just hold it up so that they recognize you. So this is what happened. And he also told me, you know, when don't worry about your suitcase if you sort of have to put it down and look around to see if you can see your family. In England, everybody is very, very honest. Nobody will take that suitcase away. So I felt very reassured. But anyway, when they saw me off at the station, my father, I was already standing by the window in the train looking out, and my father turned to our friend and said, "One day you will hear her on the radio." And that was absolutely extraordinary, because there was no way in which he could have known that I shall be with the BBC one day and she would actually hear me. And so that was quite unbelievable. But I didn't want my father to see that I was sort of sad about going and altogether worried. So I never cried or anything, and I smiled and waved and all the rest of it. But the minute the train was out of the station, I sat down and I cried. And of course that was before the kinder transport and so on, so I was absolutely on my own. And but on the other hand, I think I was secretly quite happy not to be in Germany anymore.
Yes, it must have been so frightening. You were only 14 then, I think.
Well, I was 15, really. I mean,
yes.
Just 15.
Yes, it must have been a very frightening time for you,
and
I would think.
It was, but I think I must have been quite a sort of strong person, because I didn't go to pieces or anything. I was interested then in what was going on around me and who was in the train and all that sort of thing. So I didn't sit and grieve too much. I was on my way then. But what I did not know until quite a time later, that my father, who had had so much stress and worry, that night he had the first of a number of heart attacks. And so he died, in fact, 3 months after that. He had several more heart attacks. And fortunately, he died at home. And at least he did not have to go through the terrible experience of being deported. But I remember he always had a little suitcase handy by his bed in case they came to fetch him. But this lovely Catholic friend in fact hid him in her shop under packing cases when the Nazis were searching for Jews. And I also remember that one day friend of my father's came into the house, and I remember he looked absolutely ashen, and he said, "They're after me." And it was, of course, very dangerous to hide anyone in those days, because then you yourself were taken away. And I remember my father said to me, "Look, go into the road and make sure that there are no Nazis around. And when everything is clear, come back and tell me." Yeah. And then I'll tell my friend too. He's able to go. But of course, no doubt at some point or other they would have caught him. And that was, of course, very difficult. And all these experiences, of course, made one realize that life was almost getting worse day by day. And there were, of course, the Nazis were marching along, and there was Hitler on the radio screaming his head off. And so my grandmother, of course, was also very upset, and yet very happy when she knew I was able to go, and especially to come to England with the family and so on. So I had also another interesting thing is that the Jewish school I went to gradually the students left. They emigrated here and they emigrated there, and the classes became smaller. And in a book I've got on the school, it showed that towards the end there were only a handful of students left, and in fact they were deported, and also the teachers that were still left. And so that school of course closed down, but now, after all these years, the present Jewish community in Frankfurt has been able to buy the school back again, and it is being used as a Jewish school, but they also take non-Jewish children, which is quite interesting.
Your brother, could I ask at this stage, you know, because you're on the train and you're going to England.
Yes.
You said your brother was, Oswald was in France.
He was in France, and he was, when he left Germany, first of all, he went to Belgium to learn French properly, and then he went to a hotel management school in Thonon-les-Bains in France. And he was going to qualify there, and he never came back to Germany, but his story is a very sad one, because he was deported from Vichy, France. And I think it might be quite interesting. I've translated his last letter to me when he was in the train which took him east, let's put it that way, and how he had a little bit of scrap of paper and a pencil, and he scribbled this note to me, which by some miracle I don't know who he gave it to, but it arrived in Switzerland at some good friends, and they posted it on to me. And I just,
end of reel one, Mrs. Laura Confino.